Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online at sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. This week's show brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. We'll talk to Joe Henry and find out what's going on with Lake of the Woods and where they're at and how fast the ice is melting up there. Coming up later in the show, it's also brought to you by Haybale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. We get weekly reports from Devil's Lake from Lucas Mertens here on the radio show as well. We'll talk to Jamie Dittman from the Brainerd area. He'll give us a Brainerd area report. We'll even talk turkey hunting and get some tips for first-time turkey hunters, or find out just kind of what's going on with the birds right now with Jamie. And we'll hear from Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department as well. Now, I'm pretty excited. Our first guest, I'm going to be doing some fishing with him up on the North Shore coming up early next week. And I've never done this before, and I've just heard just how much fun steelhead fishing can be and just how much fun those fish are. And in recent years, I've just gotten more and more into trout fishing in general, whether it be big lakers up on Tazon Lake in Saskatchewan or rainbows. And so we're going to talk about steelhead right now on the show and just find out what the conditions are like. So Garrett Sveer joins us right now, Slab Seeker Fishing. Garrett, how's it going?
Hey, going good. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited for our trip.
You bet. And, you know, just real quick, I always like to tell people when I tell them I've been getting into, you know, stream trout or lake trout fishing, and I like fishing for them through the ice as much as possible, but it's fun open water too. I'm just not a very good fly fisherman, I think, is my biggest problem with open water fishing. But when I tell people why I like to fish for trout now, I always tell them to watch when the Minnesota State Fair takes place and the DNR has their fish pond and they put that underwater camera. Have you ever watched that camera before, Garrett?
I have. Yep, definitely.
So what do you notice? Okay, muskies kind of sit and float. Walleyes just sit on the bottom and don't move. Pike kind of swim around a little bit. But what fish is constantly swimming in circles and not stopping and just... It's the trout. They're just angry fish. They never stop. They're feisty. They're tough. And is the steelhead, is that kind of the, other than maybe giant lakers, is the steelhead kind of the top of the food chain when it comes to these fish?
You know, as far as hard fighting fish, I would honestly venture to say the hardest fighting fish that I've ever caught pound for pound in fresh water.
Really?
You know, more so than smallmouth bass. I've done a lot of smallmouth fishing and I haven't done a ton of lake trout fishing. You know, big lakers can fight pretty good too, but you know, it's different. One thing about these steelhead is they're going to be up out of the water and they're real acrobatic, which I think really adds to it for me too. And then not only will they make powerful runs, but where a lot of my customers and myself included lose fish is they'll make a big powerful run, then they'll turn on a dime and come right back at you as fast as you can. And if you can't get that line picked up in time, that's usually when things go wrong.
I mean, any fish that tries to jump up rapids has got to be a tough fish to do that. I mean, steelhead just seems like a fitting name for them, Garrett. Do you know where that name comes from?
Well, you know, there's an age-old argument that a rainbow trout that migrates and touches salt water is a steelhead. So guys from the West Coast, there's been a 1,000-year debate that guys from the West Coast say that our Great Lakes fish are real steelhead, that they're just rainbow trout.
Oh.
But whatever you like to call them, our steelhead that migrate from Lake Superior into the rivers and make a spawning migration is what we refer to as steelhead on the north and south shores of Lake Superior. And whatever you call them, they're pretty incredible fish. Like you said, I mean, all of our fish on the north shore of Lake Superior are wild. They're not stocked at all.
Right.
They stock some Kamloops rainbow trout, a different type of rainbow trout altogether. But all of our fish are wild, self-sustaining fish, and they were born in the rivers and live out in Lake Superior, and they're pretty mean. They'll jump a 5-6 foot waterfall.
That's insane. It's nuts. Garrett Sveer, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio, and I want to talk a little bit more about rainbows and Kamloops and steelhead coming up. But let's just talk about what it's like on the North Shore. And so fishing for steelhead is open right now. When does that season open? When can you fish steelhead up there?
You know, below the posted barrier, which would be the barrier waterfalls, which stops the upstream migration of fish from Lake Superior, the season never closes. It's open year round. Now, kind of what you're trying to hit is a sweet spot water temperature wise. you know, around 40, 41 degrees is about the peak of the steelhead spawn. So that'll get those fish on gravel, actively laying eggs. They're going to come into the rivers when it's a little bit cooler than that. What we've battled this year is everything is just way behind. We're a full month behind where I'm normally at this time of year. So we've been battling ice in the rivers. And everything kind of blew out last Saturday, Sunday on the North Shore. And so since then, we've been battling dirty and high water. But finally now, as I talked to you about it before, things are really getting to a nice spot. I just took a drive up the shore, and I'm finding, you know, 4 to 6 inches of visibility in about everything. And so my prediction is things are really going to get started here now, and they should keep getting better here for the next 4 or 5 days. And then the season will last. These fish, you know, typically I book guide trips for steelhead through Memorial Day weekend. But this year, those fish are going to be around far later than that. Those fish are going to be around, you know, who knows? There's going to be some rain, no doubt, in, you know, the middle of June, and those rivers are still going to take big runs of fish even in June.
Hmm. When's the last time you saw that happen?
No, never. Never, never in my life. I was born and raised in Two Harbors, and so I've been fishing the rivers since I was, you know, 13, 14 years old, and I can't say I've ever seen you know, a whole bunch of steelhead around in June. I've seen a few, but I think this year we're going to have massive runs of fish around still well after the fishing opener into the late June.
And this is one of those fish that people like to target for the sport of catching one of them, because as it goes with wild steelhead up there in the North Shore, it's all catch and release.
Right. 100% catch and release on the fish. You can take them out of the water for pitchers and stuff like that. You don't have to keep them in the water. But all the fish do have to be released. And I'm a big advocate of, you know, teaching people how to take good care of those fish as well. We use a rubber landing net that doesn't rub any slime off of the fish. So when a customer hooks a wild fish up, what we'll do is we'll get that fish in the net. I hand them a tailing glove just so they don't drop them, because it's, I don't know if you've handled trout a lot in the past, but they're pretty slippery to handle. And you get one that's,
they don't sit still.
Yeah, and you get one that's 8 to 10 pounds. Good luck holding that to get a photo. So I give him a tailing glove, which gives him a little something to grip around the tail. We lift him out of the net for, you know, usually 2 quick photo bursts, as quick as we can shoot them, and then right back into the water, and they're gone.
Talking with Garrett Sevier here on Sporting Journal Radio about steelhead fishing up on the North Shore. Talking about steelhead, and you mentioned you grew up in Two Harbors. What was it like growing up on the North Shore?
Well, you know, growing up in the North Shore, steelhead fishing is pretty important. That's right ahead of your birthday and Christmas on the priority list is when the steelhead are in the rivers. But beautiful place to live, beautiful place to grow up. Some good inland fishing opportunities that I think are pretty overlooked up that way too. There's a lot of good walleye lakes up there. There's a lot of big bluegills up there. Pretty neat area to explore, and a lot of neat places just to hike around and check out waterfalls. I've got a lot of customers that, they want to catch steelhead, but they also want to see some of the bigger waterfalls on the North Shore. And so we'll take them around and show them some of those bigger sets of falls too, that if you're a steelhead angler, you kind of take for granted. But, you know, a lot of people that aren't from town really don't get a chance to see stuff like that very often.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the experience, I think, you know, and we're coming up with you to film with Prairie Sportsman Television. And part of the planning process that we're doing for the shoot up there is not just to catch a bunch of steelhead. And by the sounds of it, we're primed to do that. But also to showcase some of the scenery and some of the just some of the beautiful landscapes that are up there along the North Shore. So we're looking forward to that. And Garrett, you say the steelhead is pretty important to a guy that grew up on the North Shore, especially that somebody that's into fishing like you are. Do you remember catching your first one?
I absolutely do. I was actually under the bridge at the Lester River in Duluth, and I was down there with my mom. I don't remember how old I was, maybe, you know, 10 or 11 years old. And she was sitting behind me reading a book, and I had a Zebco 33 and a MEP spinner, a number 2 MEP spinner with a spawn bag on the back of it, which in the spring in the cold water is not a real effective way to fish. And I know that now, but at the time I did not. And, you know, expert steelheaders will tell you fish will never hit a spinner in the spring because they're too lethargic. Well, I can tell you about one time when they did. I ended up looking about at the time it seemed like about a 35-inch steelhead. In all reality, it was probably more like about 25. But I hooked this steelhead and didn't have waders on, of course. You know, I'm wearing jeans and tennis shoes. And so I can't chase this thing down towards the mouth of the Lester to Lake Superior. And so I'm forced just to kind of hold my ground. And I think I had about 12-pound test on the Zebco 33. You probably could have seen smoke coming out of it, but the drag system by how hard this thing was running. And I finally got the fish up against the bank, and I'm yelling for my mom, "Mom, grab the net, you know, get the net." And I got this little tiny trout net like you'd buy to fish in, you know, southeastern Minnesota. And, you know, about a 12-inch trout net. And she got down there, and she got the fish's head in the net. And instead of kind of, you know, flipping it towards the bank, the fish jumped out and broke the line. And we ended up losing it. So heartbreaker. But that's a good memory. I lost my mom this last year in June. And
I'm sorry.
So that was a good memory that she was always up for taking me out fishing and getting me on the rivers, even when I was, you know, like really young and I couldn't even safely really wade them with my dad at that point with high water and stuff like that. But she'd find a place where I could get out, like an easy spot, like under the bridge at the Lester where there was some fish coming in. And so, yeah, you never forget something like that. Your first steelhead is a pretty special experience, even for adults, even if you're not a kid.
So should I ask my mom to come with next week when I come up to catch my first steelhead?
I think she'd really enjoy it,
man. I've never caught a steelhead. We did go up and fish for Kamloops, and I want to talk a little bit about the Kamloops situation up there and the difference between Kamloops and steelhead for our listeners, Garrett. More with Garrett Sveer coming up. Also, Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods. We'll talk to Jamie Dittman from the Brainerd area and get some fishing reports from those guys. And we'll also talk turkeys too. And Doug Lear from North Dakota Game and Fish, all on the way here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle, here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online at sportingjournalradio.com, and by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. Some of our listeners up in Duluth and along the North Shore up there know all about steelhead fishing. For listeners on the rest of the network in other parts of the state and in Wisconsin and North Dakota, you may not know about the popularity of fishing along the North Shore. Just, you know, some people might be intimidated by it. Like I knew, you know, growing up, about the only experience that my family had up there fishing, Garrett, was fishing. Like my brother used to go up for the smelt run with his friends, and they, you know, it's more of a fun weekend than much fishing for a lot of those guys, at least back when he used to do it when he was younger. But sure. Then we go up the shore and we'll go up to the Gunflint Trail and we'll fish walleye lakes up there, smallmouth or big pike and things like that. But a lot of times when people think about, fishing Lake Superior or fishing the tributaries, they can be intimidated by it and not know, you know, what kind of gear, what the regulations are, what kind of fish there are up there. But realistically, Garrett Sveer joining us here on Sporting Journal Radio, when you think about the type of gear you need, you really don't need that much to go fish for these fish up there, do you?
You really don't. And that's one thing I've always advocated for is, I'm not an elitist by any stretch of the imagination as far as fly fishing goes. You can go up there if you enjoy fly fishing. You can fly fish for these fish. You can go up there and fish as something as simple as a bobber and a worm or a spawn bag and be really super successful catching steelhead on those streams up on the North Shore tributary. So it's really something anybody can do. And, you know, that's kind of what makes it great is the simplicity of it. It's, I've got a bowl with every gadget known to man on it as well. But if there's something, you know, kind of fun and liberating about going out there with just a vest and a handful of hooks and some split shot and hiking around and chasing those fish with pretty light minimalistic gear.
Yeah. And I fly fished for the first time down at Whitewater last year, and it was fun, and I did catch a rainbow. But I'll tell you what, I'm not opposed to grabbing a spinning rod or something. I would love to try to catch one on a fly rod, but I know that's going to be comical for people that are going to watch it on Prairie Sportsman. So, so we'll try that. But I just want to do battle with one of those fish up there. And, you know, and I know,
absolutely. And we can do a variety of techniques. Sure. And that's what I usually try to do is with customers is kind of, you know, do a variety of things from spinning gear to fly rods to even some center pin reel, something that's kind of an up and coming way to catch these fish. That's really super effective. The other nice thing is you don't have to be able to cast like, you know, a world champion fly caster to catch these fish, because we're fishing in pretty condensed, thick areas. And so all you're really going to need to know is how to make a good roll cast and how to do some mending, which is just keeping your line upstream of your strike indicator, so you get a natural drag-free drift.
Sure.
So sure. It's pretty simple fly fishing. It's, you know, not like going out in the ocean where you need to be able to cast all the line in your reel or anything like that. It's just a simple roll cast in some pretty small streams.
Well, I'm excited to fight Steelhead because of what I've heard about him. And I did get a chance to battle a looper, a cam loop up there a couple of years ago. So tell us, tell our listeners kind of the difference between cam loops and steelhead and what the future holds for both of these.
Sure. Fish. So cam loops rainbow trout originated from Kamloops, British Columbia. And they started stocking them back in the 90s. It might have even been before that. I think they started stocking them back in the 70s, actually. Back in the 90s is when our wild steelhead population really got kind of in peril and was pretty tough for a while. And so, you know, being a kid, learning from my dad how to fish for steelhead, you know, one steelhead was always a good day out on the water. Now we're kind of living in the heydays of steelhead fishing. I mean, we had more double-digit days with customers that had never steelheaded before last year than I've ever seen in my life. So, you know, you always kind of hear about when things were great and but now we're actually living in that time in steelhead fishing. But they started to really focus on planting those cam loop rainbows back in the 90s because our steelhead population was so low. And in my opinion, that was probably due to allowing harvest of those fish. So they really put a lot of stock into this cam loops rainbow stocking program. And they would rear these fish at the French River and they'd release them at points all south of two harbors between the Leicester River and Sucker Bay, and they'd release these fish out there. They'd grow up, kind of stick around the shoreline all winter, spring, fall, and you could catch them from shore with bobbers and wax worms, night crawlers blown up full of air, floating spawn bags, and they just kind of hang out on the shorelines. And you know, the DNR had always said that they were a sterile fish and that they weren't able to reproduce, and so it was just a put and take fishery. So you were allowed to go out and harvest up to three of these fish a day over 16 inches long, and it made for a nice shore fishery, and you know, it was a pretty good thing, and it really boosted the population, so you could go out and actually hook fish from shore back in the 90s when the steelhead population was so low. Well, what they found in the last couple of years is, I still got to get my packet for this year, but I've been participating in a genetic study from the DNR where they had us take some scale samples and actually send those back into the DNR so they could look at the genetics of the fish. And what they found is those Kamloops actually weren't sterile.
Really?
They've been interbreeding with our wild steelhead. The concern being that our wild steelhead can jump these big waterfalls and make it up to the best spawning areas on a tributary. And the Kamloops rainbow trouts really genetically aren't built to make it in that rough terrain up to where the best spawning habitat is. So it was kind of alarming to hear that those fish were, I guess, watering down the genetics of our wild steelhead a little bit. So the DNR actually discontinued the stocking program on Kamloops rainbow trout. And from my understanding, what they're going to do now is they're going to stock our same strain of wild steelhead, and they're going to clip the adipose fin, or that back fin that kind of looks like a thumb right above the tail, on those stock steelhead to let people know that you're allowed to harvest those fish.
Interesting.
And you'll be able to take one of those fish to eat too. But it'll be the same strain of fish that have always been here, our wild self-sustaining, you know, steelhead. And so if those fish interbreed, there wouldn't be any difference genetically.
So let me ask you this then. Why didn't they just stock those steelhead in the first place versus going and getting Kamloops?
You know, I'm not 100% sure about that. We do have an interview scheduled with one of the DNR biologists, and that'd be a great question. Yeah. For him when we're doing Prairie Sportsman. I'm not 100% sure on that, but you know, I know one thing that guys are still kind of complaining about. Those of us that really like to fish in the rivers are loving this. We're like, yep, we definitely don't want our wild steelhead population watered down. The guys that spend a lot of time shore fishing, places like in front of the French River and in McQuaid Harbor, are a little concerned about it just because it's going to limit their opportunities to catch fish from those areas a little bit.
Sure.
They've always tried to figure out what our steelhead do in the summertime, and they've put in some radio tags in them, and some of them will go out and suspend over 300 feet of water. Those Kamloops rainbow trout really stuck around the shorelines all the time.
They just sit in McQuaid Harbor, don't they?
Yeah, basically. I mean, those fish, they just don't like to go out over deep water. You know, you never hear about the charter boat captains hooking a Kamloops rainbow because they just don't go way out there. So that was kind of the tricky part about it is, you know, there's a lot of anglers that enjoy that. And, you know, it's one of those tough situations for sure.
And right now, I'm assuming some of those Kamloops will stick around for a little bit, and they have a tag, right? So that's how you can differentiate between a wild steelhead and a Kamloop.
Well, no, they're not all necessarily tagged. They'll tag them when they get to the French and take the eggs out, but we landed one, just the other day that was not. So they're not all necessarily tagged. You'll know because they have a clipped adipose fin.
Okay.
And those steelhead they're stocking now are going to be really small. You know, those fish are only going to be, you know, tiny, tiny fish. Whereas those Kamloops are going to be big fish. They're going to be, you know, 23 inches plus, and they're going to have a clipped fin in the back.
Sure.
Which indicates it's a hatchery fish.
Garrett Sveer, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, about to go up and do some filming for Prairie Sportsman up on the North Shore to go after steelhead. I couldn't be more excited about it. And if people want to get up there and do a guided trip with you, I don't know if you still have any openings yet this spring or not, but if they wanted to get up and try to work in a date with you or maybe do some you guide in Otter Tail County too, don't you?
Yeah, in the summer I do, summer and winter I do panfish in Otter Tail County. Yep.
Very nice. Well, if people want to book a trip with you, where do they go?
And I also do fall steelhead on the rivers as well. So I've got a lot of fall openings if people want to get out. Spring's getting a little bit full right now, but might be able to sneak in if you give me a call. My website is slabseekerfishing.com, where I have a Facebook page as well. It's facebook.com/slabseekerfishing.
Very cool. Garrett Sveer, thanks for the time here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Hey, sure, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Coming up, some more fishing reports. We'll talk to Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods. We'll talk to Jamie Dittman from the Brainerd Lakes area. And we'll also hear from Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department.
It can't buy happiness, but it can buy me a boat.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Hi, you are listening to Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online at sportingjournalradio.com, and by subscribing to the podcast and iTunes. Well, if this warmer weather that we finally got this last week hasn't gotten you excited about open water fishing, then I don't know what will, because cabin fever was setting in for all of us, I think, and we were waiting for some warmer temperatures to start melting the ice and to start making plans for open water, maybe for the opener. Maybe for some trips, maybe for some summer trips. And if you're going to plan a summer trip, one of the best places to go, it's just a short drive for all of us listening here on Sporting Journal Radio, is up to Lake of the Woods. And to tell us what things look like up there right now, Joe Henry joins us from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, it's been nice this week.
Oh my gosh. You know what? What a difference a week makes. Holy smokes. I mean, between the sun and the warm wind and the water temperature warming up, that's been just doing a number on the ice. And I'll tell you what, Brett, you know, the Rainy River, you know, that's where kind of the focus is right now as far as fishing goes up a Lake of the Woods. You know that over the weekend, this past weekend, it opened up over 12 miles. And wow. It's now open all the way through Wheeler's Point, where the mouth of the river is and all the resorts are. And it's actually open way into 4 Mile Bay, heading towards the lake. So it's just, I mean, ice is melting like crazy. I saw Bostic Bay opened up, Zippel's about to pop. I mean, it's things are happening.
Yeah, and you know, we always talk about late season tip-up fishing for big pike up there, and I'm assuming now pretty much everyone's off the ice as far as that's concerned.
When I'm talking tourists, yes. When I'm talking guests, yes. There's still some crazy guides up there who are locals, and you know, they're still out hunting some pike, but like I talked to one of them recently, and you know, they couldn't access the lake where they normally would, so they had to go to a certain shoreline where the ice was still okay. And he was in an airboat, although he said, you know, where we accessed the ice, we could have been out on an ATV, you know. But, yeah, it's not practical, I don't think, at this point for sure. You know, for people that are coming up to go tip up fish.
But now
the pike are, you know, they're out there, but.
Yeah, and the pike season up there stays open year round, right? So when the ice opens up, I mean, somebody could target them in a boat, couldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they do. And you know, our those pike, what ends up happening is, like right now, they're staging for the spawns. So the reason tip up fish is so good late in late ice like this is because with those, they don't school, those pike don't. But what they do is they get congregated in the pre-spawn areas adjacent to the spawning grounds. So what'll happen is they'll be pre-spawn, and then what'll happen is they'll start moving into these backwaters, into the bays and such. And, you know, places like, you know, some of the Winter Road River, 4 Mile Bay, Bostic Creek and Bostic Bay adjacent to Morris Point, Zippel Bay. I mean, those are favorite pike hunts early in the year like this, and what'll happen is those fish will slide in there, and anglers, yes, they can fish them in boats, and that's small water. I mean, those are small bays, so they can go back there in a 14-foot boat, and you know, different ways to target them. Some people use dead bait, almost like a dead bait on a quick strike rig, and they'll put that under a bobber or lay it on the bottom, you know, in that mud that's warming up, because those fish are somewhat lethargic. I do know other people that have actual slow troll cranks, or they'll cast and slow roll spinner baits. So it just kind of depends. But the point of it is, they do get some monster pike, those fish that are over 40 inches back in those bays.
Yeah, a chance to catch some trophy pike up there. You don't hear about guys fishing Lake of the Woods out of 14-foot boats very often, Joe.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, I tell you, the Rainy River and the Back Bays, that's typically the area to do it. You know, another area you can do that in, of course, is up at the northwest angle. But, you know, just like the main lake, there's still ice there, and that'll be popping, you know, sometime around the opener.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about Lake of the Woods and where we're at right now. And you said recently 12 miles of the Rainy River opened up. Are guys up there catching sturgeon right now?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, yeah, so 12 miles opened up. So currently there's over 42 miles of navigable river that's open for fishing. So there's plenty of space. All the river accesses, there's, you know, like five of them or something, they're all opened up, with the exception of a couple small ones that are adjacent to bays, that there's still ice. But yeah, they're catching sturgeon. I mean, and it's funny because this last week, a couple of the feeder rivers, you know, broke loose a little bit. So it stained up the water some. It muddies up the water a little bit. But, you know, it doesn't matter so much with sturgeon like it does walleyes. You know, walleyes are so much more sight feeders, where sturgeon, they feed by scent. So even though the water got a little dirtier this week, and it's going to clean up, but they're still catching sturgeon, which is cool. And I saw one post from a guide, and he said, you know, the conditions, the water got dirty, and it got a little colder, and da-da-da-da, and it messed up fishing a little bit. But you know what? The clients I had out, they still caught four sturgeon total, and both caught the biggest freshwater fish of their life.
Wow.
You know?
And it's pretty easy to do up there, right?
Oh, it is easy, yeah. And, you know, really, when it comes right down to it, you know, finding a hole in the river, you know, some of the deeper spots in the river, and then basically just, you know, fishing. Typically, you want to fish the upstream part of that and drop your offering down into that hole. You know, 3 to 5 ounce no roll sinker with an 18-inch sturgeon rig, which you can pick up there at all the bait shops. It's about an 18-inch, 60-pound leader material with a 5-aught circle hook, and you know, you load that up with a whole bunch of crawlers and a gob, or you can load it up with a combo of crawlers and frozen shiners. It's really stink. And just fish it on the bottom like you would catfish or carp. And, you know, those sturgeon will just kind of tap it like you know, a small fish would. And, you know, when you set the hook on a circle hook, you don't really set the hook. You just tighten it up real, you know, tighten it up real fast, and, you know, just kind of, you know, swing your rod real slow. And that hook will slide up to the mouth and hook in the mouth, which is not only a good conservation effort, but it's real, you know, real good hooking percentages. And so it works out good. Yep.
A lot of guys catch and release. They take a picture, put that fish back in the water. And pictures of sturgeon are always interesting because it looks like people are bear hugging them, or you kind of have to be careful with them, don't you?
You do. I mean, any fish that's that big, you got to be careful. And what a lot of people don't, you know, realize, because, you know, normally we're not catching fish that are 50 to 100 pounds. But, you know, you don't want to hold those fish by the gills. You don't want to be touching their eyes, because the sheer weight of them will hurt those organs. You know, the other thing is, you don't want to hold a big fish like that vertically, because the internal organs, you can actually tear some of the membranes and some of the organs inside of them because they're such a big fish. So what you ultimately want to do is hold those fish horizontally and support the weight of their bellies when you're doing so. So when you see, you know, one or two anglers holding a sturgeon, you know, horizontally and supporting their weight, that's actually a good conservation measure. The sturgeon do very well, you know, catching them. And I mean, they're a tough fish, and they can live out of water, especially that real ice cold water. They can do a real nice job in that. But the thing is, you still got to do your part, you know, making sure you have a big net, making sure that if you're not going to use a net, maybe you have a lasso for the tail. The tail's hard, so you can grab that tail and support their belly weight or put a lasso around it. You're making sure your needle nose is ready, making sure your camera's ready. Those are just good ethical things to do when you're fishing sturgeon.
Couple of minutes left here with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism on Sporting Journal Radio, talking about catching sturgeon on the Rainy River right now. And people are up there. It's catch and release right now, right? What are the season dates? Because I know it closes, and then there's a keep season. And how's it go?
Well, it's actually the keep season right now. So and what I'd recommend is folks check it out, either Lake of the Woods Tourism's Facebook page or our website, just to see the season, because it goes from catch and release to keep to catch and release. And what I would recommend is just looking at the dates. But currently, right now, it's a keep season. So that means that, you know, if you purchase a $5 sturgeon tag, you know, you have to catch sturgeon between, you know, the proper lengths. It's, I believe it's 45 to 50 inches and one over 75. But if you catch one within the proper length, then you can keep one per year as long as you have that tag. You take it just in front of the tail. You put that tag on it like a deer, and you get one per calendar year. And, you know, different schools of thought. Some people say they're such an old, majestic fish. Don't injure them. Put them back. It takes such a long time for them to grow. Other people say, oh, man, you know, eat them up. That's why they have a season. And yeah, they love them. You know, they talk about smoking them. They talk about grilling them. They talk about baking them. I mean, there's some people that are talking about, hey, sturgeon meat's so good, you can't cook it wrong. So teach their own, you know what I mean?
Well, and speaking of regulations, we should mention too, since we were talking about northern pike earlier, that some new regulations went into effect for northern pike in Minnesota, but it doesn't affect Lake of the Woods, Joe.
That's correct, yeah. You know, Lake of the Woods is border waters, so consequently, we keep our regulations. Opening day of Minnesota fishing season is May 12th this year, and there's a whole bunch of new regs for different sections of Minnesota. The exceptions are border water with different states or border water with Canada. And of course, we're border water with Canada. So our regulations are you can keep 3 pike year-round, and anything between 30 and 40 inches you must throw back, and you can keep 1 fish, you know, over 40 inches. It's a good limit. It's a limit that encourages a trophy fishery, and that's exactly what we have up at Lake of the Woods for pike. Is a, you know, we've developed a trophy fishery where there's a lot of fish that are big, big pike.
Well, if people want to go up there and try to chase some of those pike here this spring, or some of those giant sturgeon, or even just start making plans for the opener or this summer. I know we talk about it every year, the opener on Lake of the Woods. People think it's going to be busier than it actually is, but what a great place to go for the walleye opener. I know we joked about people ice fishing on the opener. It looks like plenty of open water to take your boat up there as well. Joe, where can they find out more information about Lake of the Woods?
Yep. You know what? Search Lake of the Woods Tourism in Facebook. Otherwise, check out our website, and that's Lake of the Woods MN.com.
Jamie Dittman coming up and Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, we are back here on the radio show called Sporting Journal Radio. It is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio network, online at sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. All right, Doug Lear from North Dakota Game and Fish will join us before the end of the show here. But first, we're going to check in with our pal, Jamie Dittman from the Brainerd Lakes area, Captain Dittman.
Captain.
Jamie, what's it looking like around Brainerd? This ice melting up there too, or what?
You know, that right now there's a lot of difference in the lakes. South of town, Crowing Lake is pitch black ice and could go any day. And North Long, there's still plenty of ice for a wheeler as long as the shoreline holds up. So
interesting.
Right now, you really want to be careful on what you go out on.
Yeah, I think I would just wait for open water at this point, but that's just me, and I got too many other things going. We should be out snow goose hunting still is what we should be doing, which I never thought you'd hear me say that at the end of April like this. But
you know, you really should do some snow goose hunting. I heard it's fun. You should try it.
I should try it. My gosh. So Tony from Mid-Migration Outfitters was out this week, and some friends, they just went and did a fun hunt. And man, they absolutely hammered birds. Now, with all the warm weather we've had the past few days, it's hard to say. I'm sure you could still, I mean, there's 30 million of those white winged birds winging around, so I'm sure you'd be able to find some somewhere in the Dakotas, but they are definitely trucking fast. A lot of guys starting to hunt them up in Canada too, so I might, which I promised myself I was going to turkey hunt this year, Jamie, and I still haven't yet taken my bow out of my case.
Well, you got a lot of seasons left, and then you can hunt all seasons, and then I'll be buying the over-the-counter in a couple of weeks. We're going to be doing a turkey hunt for the Boys and Girls Club out of Bemidji.
Oh, really? Oh yeah.
It's out.
Wes, is that the one with Wes Gall?
Yep, Wes is setting it up, and we're going to go up there and do some scouting, and me and buddy Cody Mueller, and should be a good time.
Nice. Yeah, I was talking to Wes about that the other day, actually, and he was asking if I could come up and do some filming, and I'm not going to be able to get up there that weekend. So if anybody out there is listening and they want to do some volunteer filming of a turkey hunt around the Bemidji area, that's next weekend, the 5th and 6th?
Yep.
And that's up around Bemidji. So get a hold of Jamie or Wes Gall for that information. That's pretty cool. You're taking some kids out?
Yeah, it should be fun. A lot of them, you know, it'll be their first experience turkey hunting, and probably a lot of them first experience shooting. So that's always fun to get some new kids hooked on the sport.
You tend to do that more than hunt for yourself nowadays, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go out the last season or something, but it's just, you know, I've taken a lot of kids out and got their first birds, and I actually took kids out before I ever shot one myself. And then, you know, I got to get my wife one too, the expression on her face when she got one. I mean, it's just so cool watching.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I just never got into turkey hunting for a long time. I didn't do it growing up. And I probably shot my first turkey now, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. And I still remember that first time that I went out there, and I'm a glutton for punishment. So I always try with my bow first. And I remember the first time I got out there and I'd spotted a turkey, I'd scouted, I knew there were turkeys in the area. And when I pulled up, it was during the day, it was already light out, and I could see him strutting across this clearing in the woods. So I crawled up to the edge of the woods and I watched him kind of disappear. And I went out, set my decoy quick, and I ducked back into the woods and
took cover, and I started calling, and nothing happened. And I waited a couple of minutes, and I started calling again, and then nothing happened. I'm scanning the landscape. I don't see anything coming out of the woods over on the other side of that clearing. I'm just picturing in my head this Tom just to come thundering out of the woods and come barreling across the clearing straight at me, you know? So I'm just peering off into these woods across the clearing looking for him. I call a third time, and as soon as I start calling, this Tom gobbles directly behind me. It scares the heck out of me. And he, a different one, had come up out of this ravine behind me, and he ended up getting to about 30 yards, got hung up on a fence, and he wouldn't cross the fence. And because he came up in a different direction, I didn't have any shot at him with my bow, and he ended up getting away. But that's when I finally saw the allure of calling in a turkey, and I got the rush from it, and I can see why people enjoy doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, once you do it, then it's you see them all the time. But once you do it, it's different.
And I've also heard about how some turkeys are just dumb, and you watch them fight their reflection in basement windows and things like that, and storefront windows I've seen. But it seems like they always get a lot smarter when you go out to hunt them, Jamie.
They do. You know, you see them on a highway looking at a plastic bag, but then. Then that's totally different when you go out.
So when somebody comes up and says, "Hey, I want to try turkey hunting," what advice do you give them?
You know, just start with a slate call or a box call. That's the easiest to start with. Camo head to toe, and you know, really all you need is a cheap foam decoy, a $5 decoy.
Right.
Because when they want to come in, they want to come in. So it really doesn't take much to start at all.
So do you use a ground blind then, or you just kind of sit up against a tree?
It depends on the situation. You know, if I know where to go and there's a good spot, I'll set up a ground blind. If I'm just running and gunning and calling and walking down a trail, then I'll just bring a little stake blind with a little, you know, 2-foot by 4-foot piece of camo on the front of it and just set that right in front of me, lean against a tree. And when they start coming in, you don't have a lot of time to set up a blind.
Sure, sure. And when it comes to calling, you said you use a slate call?
Yep. Yep. Either slate or a box call are easy to start with. you know, watch a few videos on it and you should get it really pretty quickly. The diaphragm call takes a little more to learn.
Do you scout first?
Yeah. You know, I try to. I've went in blind before and got them, but you try to go out the night before, right before dark, and use a crow call or an owl call, and even sometimes slamming a truck door can make them gobble, and you'll see where they're roosting and, you know, set up a couple hundred yards from them in the morning. Try to get between the roost and where they're eating, you know.
Now, what about this? When you do that, or you get up early in the morning and you go out in the dark, and this has happened to me before, where you get busted.
And yep, last year I set up underneath the tree.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were there, went in blind. And we set up, and I hit the call, and right above us, it was like, oh, no.
What happened then? Are you pretty much done for the day at that point, or do you find any spot?
Yeah, they came down the tree and went the other direction.
Yeah, and there's pretty much no hope of them coming back anytime soon, is there?
Nope, you just hope that there's other birds in the area that are going to come your way. And
Jamie Dimon, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, just about 2 minutes left here with Jamie talking about turkey hunting and fishing. And let's talk about the opener a little bit. You know, we joked a lot leading up to this week about ice fishing on the opener. And I'll be honest, from a Prairie Sportsman TV show standpoint, I was kind of hoping for ice fishing on the opener. I thought that would have been fun to film and put on the TV show. But I don't think it's going to happen, Jamie.
I think you can on Lake of the Woods. I really do. But, you know, down here, I don't know. We still got a lot of ice, but it is pretty warm out now. And with the wind we're having, if we get some days with a good rain, then I believe we'll lose it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I drove around Minnesota a lot in the last week. I mean, it was warm and we had some really windy days out there. And I even talked to Joe Henry. You know, we just had Joe on here, and, you know, he's even advising – you know, not a lot of, not really ice fishing on Lake of the Woods much anymore. Some of the hardcore locals are doing it, but he's telling people not even to plan on coming up and doing much ice fishing. And he said there's 42 miles of open water right now that you can fish up there between the Rainy River and you know, getting out to the lake, and it's opening up more and more up there. So I don't know. Do you got plans for the opener yet, Jamie?
Not yet. I think in a Rainy River, but we'll see how open water goes here. And then after that, the guide trips are, I got a few weekends in Park Rapids coming up, and
all right,
it's only 176 days till elk hunting.
Well, we'll talk about that on a future show. For now, Jamie, if people want to guide with you, whether or fish with you and have you guide them, whether around Brainerd or up on Lake of the Woods or the Rainy, what should they do?
Just find me on Facebook or snwguideservice.com or snwbait, or check out Riverbend Resort on Lake of the Woods, and we'll be running up there this summer too.
All right, Jamie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to Joe Henry and Garrett Sveer. Thank you for listening. Before we wrap up, here's Doug Lear.
A concern and interest for education on pollinators continues to grow. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. Pollinator education and information is a current emphasis for conservation groups and agencies. As part of the effort, the Game and Fish Department is sponsoring workshops called Wildlife of North Dakota, featuring pollinators for teachers, environmental educators, and anyone else who works with youth. One of the workshops is scheduled for Botno on June 12th and 13th at Dakota College. The other is a week later in Bismarck on June 19th and 20th at the Game and Fish Department's main office. Both workshops run from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day. Participants will learn about wildlife and their habitats, with the North Dakota Habitats curriculum used as textbooks. In addition, participants will receive the Urban Pollinator curriculum and explore urban pollinator gardens and learn how to develop one in a local community. The fast-paced workshops offers a hands-on approach educators can use in their classrooms and on field trips and in discussing classroom and curriculum integration. All supplies are provided. Curriculum materials are suitable for both elementary and secondary teachers. Pre-registration is required. To register, contact Sherry Neiser at 701-527-3714. A $10 deposit fee, refundable upon completion of the course, is required. Graduate credit is also available. To register for graduate credit, visit the University of North Dakota's website at und.edu. The cost for graduate credit is $50. Anyone interested in learning more about pollinators can visit the Game and Fish website at gf.nd.gov or call 701-328-6300. That's this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.